all things just free for all Q&A tonight, so that should be super fun. Thank you for sending all your questions in already, and for those joining now, just shoot through questions as we go, and I'll run through them. Just a fast fire Q&A, because it's been a pretty big week, so we didn't have a set topic, so we're just going to roll through and answer your questions, which will be great. I hope you've all had a lovely week. We've had a good one. Thursday. What have we done today? Far out. Well, we had a bit of a big day because our little boy, our oldest, had his first orientation at his big school next year, which is going to be really cool. He was so excited, but nervous, and he was very, very cute. But yeah, I think he had a very good time. I'll have to post a photo because, oh, it was so cute. After we got like a little debrief coffee and Vicky, which was very cute. So we had lots of stories. Hey everyone, welcome. All right, let's get started on the Q&A. So, all right, first question that we had was insulin resistance, what to eat and what to avoid. So for those playing at home, insulin resistance is basically when your cells aren't responding to insulin. Now, insulin, for those who aren't aware, is a hormone, and it is like the, it acts like the key that goes in the lock to let the glucose into the cells. So if the key isn't working well with the lock, you'll have a few issues in glucose entering the cell, and you'll get higher blood sugar levels. So when we're looking at insulin resistance, what you would like to change with your food is really dependent on where you're currently starting. So the big focus for me is trying to crowd the food over the day with foods that we want to see more of. And they're things like really high fiber foods, so lots of your starchy veg, lots of different colors, and oats and seeds and grains and all those types of things, but also trying to increase your polyunsaturated fatty acids or your omega-3s. So they're things like oily fish, nuts, seeds, avocado, all these types of things that can come in really, really nicely. It doesn't necessarily reverse it, but it does help to maintain it, and it's got some really good evidence there. You also want to check your vitamin D status, and also consider your lifestyle. So lots of connection to the way that your circadian rhythm works in this regard as well. So if you're a shift worker, then you are at higher risk of having insulin resistance, which is not nice, but it is one of those things within shift work that we can just do what we can do. And if you can't change your job, then we've just got to work within it. And then hopefully by crowding the plate with all this color and variety, you're starting to see a reduction in any of the ultra processed foods. So it's not about not being able to have those foods, but we do want to see a reduction on them. And ultra processed foods aren't just processed foods. Like, just because it's processed doesn't mean that it's bad. Ultra processed foods, hey Ali, are things like, you know, your fried foods, your packaged foods, like your ones high in fats and sugars, like biscuits, cakes, pastries, all that kind of jazz. The stuff that tastes really, really good and is really easy to eat a lot of, you're wanting to start to reduce. Hey, Dan. So yeah, all right, flick your questions through. I'm going to keep running through otherwise. So your opinion on spirulina, and sea buckthorn, any tips like dosages that we need to look at? So interesting supplement. So if the only claims with this were that it's a great source of nutrients, then happy days. The problem with these supplements are they're, number one, expensive, but also they claim lots of things that there's no evidence for. So I would not ever really recommend these types of products unless there was a really big need or someone really liked them. They're an expensive way to get nutrients. So if you love them, then go for it. They're not going to harm, but don't believe all those really big claims. Oh, I really like this question. Best go-to snack when you can't kill the hunger. Probably my response would be, depending on the time, it may be something to shuffle around your meals and snacks a little bit. And don't be afraid to have a meal instead of a snack, or a small meal instead of a snack, if you are hungry. So make sure you're thinking about that, and don't like shy away from having a bigger option, because if you're anything like me, you have like 10 snacks before you realize that you should have just eaten a meal, and then you realize that you're just going to eat the meal anyway. So definitely my biggest tip is increase the sizing, or consider moving your meal forward or back depending on when you're generally hungriest. One of the biggest and best things I've changed in terms of my food came about having a kids having a kid. Having kids. And I eat dinner at 5:30. And that's naturally where I was always hungriest. And it's just improved my overall nutrition so, so much. It doesn't work logistically for most people. But if you, you know, for me, that was just an example of instead of snacking all afternoon, I have an early dinner and then I'll have a supper dessert if I need it. But yeah, it's surprising how much that has changed and improved. I'm on my personal account. Cool. Just realized I'm on my personal account on live. How good's that? All right, so we're just going to end this live video. Sorry, just Instagram having a little bit of an intermission because Alicia's failed on Facebook and just, you know, going live on my personal account. I'm glad all my friends saw it. That's good. They'll be so proud. All right, where am I? Compete nutrition, going live. What an idiot, seriously. I might need to fire myself. Lucky my boss is really forgiving. Oh dear. Let's try again. Hey everyone, just an intermission. Just stay on. I'm just fixing up my Facebook account. Oh dear. How good's that? All right, so now I'm going live on Compete Nutrition on Facebook. Excellent. Hi everyone. Sorry, you've missed half the live because Alicia went live on her personal account. Luckily, her husband has told her that she's in the wrong place. I was in the wrong room, guys. It's like, say, 2020. All right. Hello, Facebook. Hello, Instagram. Thank you for being patient and staying with me. All right. Now, let's go back. I did see a question pop up. Oh, my God. Seriously, I'm going to... Okay, benefits of creatine supplementation for endurance athletes. So supplementing creatine obviously gets a lot of airtime in your strength-based athletes. Creatine can have some really nice benefits, but it doesn't have as big a kick. Depending on the sport you're doing, if your endurance... Oh my God, I need to calm my farm and just talk not normally. If your endurance activity involves efforts, hill climbs, that kind of thing, then creatine can definitely help because that's the type of exercise it tends to be able to see a performance benefit to. However, creatine's also got some really big performance benefits, not just in terms of your racing. So you can see improvements in things like strength, which is a real win, but also improved ability to store glycogen. So there's some really cool things there that you should definitely consider taking it. Most athletes can absolutely take creatine. I would take it slowly though, especially with endurance sports. They tend to be quite sensitive to weight gain. And if you take it, the acute loading dose has a lot of water weight associated with it. And basically what happens is you gain weight. But if you take creatine in the maintenance dose, so just a teaspoon every day, forever, there's no need to go off it. You can absolutely load with creatine without that really big spike in your weight gain. Hello, Facebook. I apologize for you guys missing the start of that live. What an absolute shocker. I've done this for like 2.5 years and I've never done something so silly. So yeah, what a winner. All right. Question that came through from the Coke reel that we released today. If you haven't checked it out and you're someone who drinks Coke during your training or racing, I've just given you a hack on how to flatten Coke without waiting days. Like, how many people come to me and they're like, oh, I forgot to flatten my Coke and it's 3 days out. Stop it. There's much better ways. Now, you can either heat it up and bring it to the boil and that stops it. Oh my gosh, everyone's talking to me on Slack. Just one moment. God, this live is an absolute shit show, everyone. Bloody hell. All right, I'm just going to pause my notifications because apparently all my team work at night and they're all messaging me. All right. So you can either boil it, or if you're without a hot plate and you're like away from home and you're in a hotel, don't tell anyone. But what you can do is put the Coke in the kettle and bring that to the boil and you're sorted. However, it's a hotel kettle, so it might make the water taste a bit horrible, but don't tell anyone. Probably don't do it to your home kettle. The other option, if you're stuck and you have no other option and you're like at the venue, just add a bit of water. And I think most of us have found that, like, if you've got ice that melts in your Coke, you'll find that it goes flat. Same thing here. You're changing the surface tension of the water. It decarbonizes it and you get flat Coke instantly. So that is why you flatten it. That is not why. That's how. Why do you flatten Coke? For those playing at home who are like wondering why I'm talking about Coca-Cola. So COLA is, for endurance athletes, one of those things where you don't want to start too early on it, because once you go to Coke, it's really hard to go back to anything else. But it is a really good backup if you're struggling to get anything down, finding it hard to keep fluids down, but also finding it hard to keep food or gels or anything like that down. The reason for that is that it's a really simple sugar, as we all know. It digests really, really easily and fast, and it delivers, for example, the energy though that we need at that time. But also it's got caffeine in it. And so I mentioned in the post, it's actually one of the first reasons why we started studying caffeine all those years ago. And when I say we, it's not me, I didn't do the research. All those amazing people who did the research on caffeine for performance, they started because these athletes were just raving about having Coke later in the race. Turns out that it was both not only the sugar in it, but also the caffeine. So yeah, there were some really cool little history lessons in that. Now, the reason why we defizz is, there's a couple. Number one, it's really hard on the gut to have carbonated beverages when you're already feeling a little under the weather and struggling to keep anything down. Number two, if anyone has ever ridden with someone after they've like picked up a Coke from the petrol station, or they've run with someone who hasn't defizzed their Coke, it's a really high risk situation. Like, this is shaking as you run, but also shaking the, that looked really dodgy, shaking the bit, oh my God, I'm so immature today, shaking the bit on the bike when you're hitting bumps, you're at high risk of explosion. So I'm going to stop all hand movements while I do that and talk about it. Oh my God. So yes, flatten your Coke, do the cheat way, don't wait days for it to flatten. There we go. All right, next question. Okay, this is a full Q&A, guys, so feel free to just shoot through questions as we go, because as you can see, I'm just going so well tonight. How much does post-game nutrition impact recovery? Team tends to love a Macca's debrief. Oh, mate, I'm in for that. There's actually some really good options for recovery at Macca's, depending on the session. So in terms of recovery, it depends on when the next session is in terms of how quickly you need to start. So that 30 to 60 minute window is most important if you've got a session within like 12 hours or so, or you've got a really important thing the next day, then yes, you need to start that recovery process quickly. In terms of how important it is, like in terms of that first meal and what that looks like, ideally it is something that has fluid, that it has carbs, it has some protein, and if you can, some color. So that's generally where Macca's lets you down. However, there are ways around it. So you could absolutely tick all those boxes to start by just planning it a little bit. Obviously, the fluid's really easy to sort. That could be, depending on the size of the session, that could be anything from water, soda water, all the way to like a smoothie or thick shake. Or for like in between sessions, you might add a bit of soft drink there if you wanted to. Like, it's the time where you can actually have some leniency to try and get some carbohydrate in quickly. And depending on how hard the session is, sometimes you're just not that hungry. And so something like that, where it is fluid-based, can be a really easy way to start recovery. And then the burger. So just add a bit of color, a bit of protein in there, and happy days. And then recovery is not only in that first meal, guys. So it's not only in that first hour or two. Recovery takes 24 to 48 hours. So if you haven't had the ideal recovery immediately after your session, don't panic. You haven't ruined the session and you haven't wasted the session. Just get back to your normal eating pattern once you get home or once you can. So yeah, absolutely, you can have some freedom there. And I would say the relaxation and the team bonding that comes from that Macca session is probably just as important as your recovery food. So yeah, absolutely enjoy. Hello team, just checking for, oops, there we go. Yep, so shoot through questions, guys, as we go. Make sure you like, love, because that helps the algorithm, I have learned. So yeah, that all means a lot. Now, I think we're coming to the next question. I have an ultra run ahead. Should I include protein? Good question. This is literally, like, I don't know what's going on, but everyone started to do this endurance racing, obviously. And it's a really good question. So in terms of like endurance races, anywhere from like 1 to 4 to 5 hours, you probably wouldn't worry about protein too much. This is probably more around the ultras. So the ultras are things like your Ironman, your ultra running events, trail running, all those things that are taking anywhere from like your 8+ hours. There is a consideration around protein. Now, there's a couple of reasons why we might consider protein. It's definitely not essential. No real research has gone, you definitely need to have protein during ultra endurance. The reasons we might put it in is a thing called central fatigue. Central fatigue happens when you get a buildup of an amino acid called tryptophan in the body. And tryptophan in high levels crosses the blood-brain barrier to create our happy hormone of serotonin. Now, usually that's an excellent thing and very, very important. But in extended exercise, that serotonin can be quite high and it can make us feel a little bit sleepy and drowsy. And that's not ideal when you're going to do long endurance events. So if we can actually block tryptophan from getting to the brain, that may actually reduce our fatigue. However, no studies have actually shown it conclusively. So it's really still just a theory. But it's a non-harmful theory. So it's definitely something you can try. And you can block them through BCAAs. So everyone's probably heard of BCAA supplements. I hardly ever recommend them. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, you may want to consider them in the ultra endurance events. For protein, you may want to include it as well. Now, BCAAs are in protein, so you can include the protein, the electrolyte type of mixed drinks and still get BCAAs in them. But BCAAs are uniquely going to compete with tryptophan. Protein, you might also add for just fueling and an additional fuel. You might add it because you are going to be hungry and you need something else going in to fill you. But you also might add it because you would have flavor fatigue. So adding different drinks or options in with a bit of protein in them can definitely help with that. Oh, you're so welcome, Ben. Yeah, Ben had this exact question today as well. So it's been really, really cool to cover that a couple of times this week. So obviously everyone's heading into endurance. All right, team. I think I've covered all the questions. So unless anyone has more questions, which you're more than happy to put in, I think that might hold us up for today. Brilliant. I think I'm good. Sorry for the shit show. Oh my God. Oh dear. I think I was a bit too relaxed going into this session, guys. And we had a few issues, but that's all right. Apologies. Biggest apologies to you guys on Facebook. I really don't know what happened there. But anyway, I went on to my personal Facebook, went live. Bet all the friends loved it. Hayley, you're trying to ask a question, but I can't see it. What about a normal person? What for? Sorry, Hayley. Oh, I don't know what that question is. How do you go towards fat adaptation? Oh, I do know that one. Hayley, if you can rewrite your question, sorry, I'm just not sure what it's for. How do you go towards fat adaptation? So fat adaptation is something that you can consider depending on what you are aiming for. So it's not for everyone and it doesn't need to be for everyone. Fat adaptation basically means that you're leaning towards fat utilization during events or training. And it depends on what type of training you're doing, whether that's going to be a good thing or a negative thing to performance. Now, for exercise that's high intensity, like sprints, hill efforts, strength lifts, any of those short, sharp events. Oh, thank you, Fit M&A. What you're wanting to do is really consider that carbohydrate is king in all of those situations. It's just based on science. It's where you're going to need to access those energy stores from. And so fat adaptation doesn't actually make all that much sense. When you're looking at longer endurance races, this is where fat adaptation can be a good thing. Now, any of the studies that have been done, particularly from the EPIC team at AIS, haven't really shown a performance benefit to fat adaptation in most endurance events. However, that's at the top end. So like medal elite, they need carbohydrates for performance kind of deal. If you're someone who goes a little bit slower and is really in that aerobic pace for most of the event, whether that be marathon onwards, fat adaptation can be a good thing and it can be absolutely fine. It won't necessarily increase your performance compared to carbohydrate use, but it can be excellent in terms of like the ultra endurance races, which allows you to carry less food, fuel less, because fat adaptation can be really great in there. But if you're doing an endurance race, whether it be marathon, Ironman, ultra running, ultra racing, whatever it may be, if that race has hill efforts, if it has sprints, and high, you know, where your heart rate is up, then carbohydrates are absolutely a better option, and complete fat adaptation isn't the greatest option. Now, another piece to this is actually what we should be referring to it as is fuel flexibility. We don't necessarily want to only burn fat or only carbohydrate. What we're wanting to teach our body to do is actually be really flexible with the fuel that it uses. So whether you are doing those short bursts of activity, we want our body to use the fuel that's the best for that activity. If we're doing long, slow endurance stuff without any efforts, then we want our body to use the best fuel for that activity, which is fat. And our body can actually learn to do that through training. But also what we can do is do that through what's called periodization of our food. And so we can really push the boundaries in some sessions and not others, and teach our body how to use fat when it needs to, and teach our body to use carbohydrate when it needs to. And that is what we're after, not necessarily only being fat adapted. So I hope that makes sense. But that is like a really big overview, and I think I need to do a full session on that. Really good question. Thoughts on calcium cream? Oh, I don't have any thoughts on it because it's not food and I'm just not sure. But I will find someone who can answer that, Julian. Great question. Beetroot seems to be popular in recovery formulations for their nitrite content. Is there any scientific support for this? The beetroot side of things has definitely been shown for improved performance in the sessions that are actually really horrible length, like, you know, that 20 to hour kind of mark. And so pre, it's definitely been a great thing. Nitrite can be really good for blood delivery, and that's why it's great for performance during. And so that is probably why they're adding it to recovery products to, you know, in theory, improve the blood delivery to the muscle, although that's already happening post-event anyway. So I wouldn't stress too much over it. That's probably why they've added it as well. Most of the research that I'm aware, and I'm more than happy to do more reading on this dye, is in the performance side of during, but I will definitely look into that recovery side to see where that's coming from. I'm going to mark it down. Cool. Ah, nice little last minute questions, guys. I'll just make sure there's none on Insta. Awesome. Brilliant. Thanks so much. And I am thinking we are good to go. Thanks, guys. Have a really great rest of your week. I hope everyone on the East Coast is staying safe in all these storms and rain. But isn't it lovely to actually have some wet weather compared to this time last year? So thank you so much, everyone. Have an absolutely amazing rest of your week. Oh, thank you, Christy. Have a good one, guys. And sorry for the shambles. That's me. That's my head at the moment. But happy days. Thanks for forgiving me and staying on. See ya.